had his own problem to worry about. The Mimbanese making use of the low visibility to attack from the left. He took a moment to focus his rifle, aiming not just haphazardly at shadows in the mist, but focusing to spot flashes of red skin or bulbous black eyes. He fired three shots in quick succession, the enemy falling and not getting up again. Corso was a force of nature. Any Mimbanese who decided to engage him close up would be nearly liquefied by the cannon's point-blank blasts. And if they ran to get out of the way, they were vulnerable to Beckett's or Han's blasters. Han held his own, inspired by a leader he could finally respect. Beckett was someone who was a straight talker, who wanted his soldiers to get the job done, but do it strategically and not run straight into death. He took down a few more fighters who jumped at them from the mist, ducked, and ran to keep up with Beckett, keeping an eye on the battlefield. Corso was grappling with a large Mimbanese and sliding backward in the mud. Han saw the shooter emerge from the mist, taking aim at them, and he shouted and ran for Beckett and Corso. He couldn't get purchase in the mud, however, and didn't reach them in time. Multiple blaster shots hit Corso and the Mimbanese man he struggled with, and they both went down. Han reached Corso and pulled the Mimbanese off him. He looked up at Han, dazed eyes not recognizing him, but still alive. Beckett appeared beside Han, and they both struggled to lift Corso. Han looked at Beckett for guidance, and he pointed to a trench nearby. They stumbled, for once glad of the mud that made it easier to drag the big man. Blaster shots hit the area around them, sizzling and raising a rancid burning smell of coppery blood and befouled mud. They tumbled into the trench with Corso, and Beckett laid him on his back to look at him. But now his eyes were sightless and blank. With a heavy sigh, Beckett carefully closed them, letting his shoulders fall for a moment. It was a brief moment, but Han saw more emotion there than he had ever seen an Imperial show for a fallen soldier. Beckett straightened and gave Han a look. Without a word, he headed off, and Han followed, not even questioning what the look had meant. They had finally gotten out of range of the battle and were nearing the camp forward. They were able to walk without constantly watching for the next blaster shot. "I'm Han," he offered, trying to distract the man from his grief for only a minute. "Nobody cares," Beckett said, his voice harsh. Han looked back over his shoulder at the trench. "Sorry about your friend." Beckett looked down for a moment.
"Me too. He risked a lot to help us."
Han wondered what Beckett meant. But he had learned enough about this man not to ask for information not freely given.
"Thanks," he said, "for saving my life."
Beckett looked up and smiled slightly.
"You did all right," he said.
They walked a little farther, and Beckett turned and faced Han, looking serious.
"You want some real advice?"
Han nodded.
"Get the hell out of here. Any way you can. As soon as possible."
Han now had serious doubts that this man was a captain. No Imperial would advise another to abandon the battlefield. It was good advice, though, and Han continued to follow Beckett. They reached the base of forward field operations at last. The domed tents sat on the muddy field like boils. Droids modified to handle the planet's mud trudged from tent to tent, carrying medical equipment, calf, and other provisions. Other troopers, fresh from the battle, hurried past Han and the rest to carry fallen fellows to medical tents. And Han thought briefly of poor Corso. If only he'd been able to make it a few more meters. No. Han had seen his body. There had been too many blaster hits. He was surprised Corso had taken that many before he fell. He must have been a formidable soldier. The patrolling troopers and vehicles took no notice of Beckett and Han as they entered the base. Perhaps Beckett was legit after all.
Han had to uncover the truth.
Which company do you command, Captain?
Han asked. Maybe he could get a transfer.
Beckett checked around, looking for his other soldiers. Val and Rio headed their way, no longer trailing the two confused mud troopers they had left with. Rio still wore his helmet firmly on his head.
None of your business, Company!
And we're full up,
Val said. As if to make the dismissal complete, Val cut between them and pointed to the airfield. Beckett nodded, and they headed off. Han noticed that none of the departing troopers' uniforms fit terribly well. Rio's trousers were sagging, and as Han watched closely, a blue hand snaked out of the back of his jacket and hitched up the trousers. Rio hadn't removed his hands from his blaster as he did so. Definitely not Imperials. And yet, Han took a step forward, wanting to follow this leader more than he'd wanted to follow anyone. Maybe Beckett could be his ticket out of the infantry, out of the Imperial military altogether. He had told Han to get off the planet any way he could, after all.
Attention!
Came the shout behind him. The other mud troopers straightened, and with one last look at the departing trio, Han took a moment, and then stood up straight, too.
In 3 hours, we move out for the southern marshlands.
Han saw that the speaker was Lieutenant Bolandin. He sighed audibly. Bolandin's head snapped up.
What was that?
He demanded.
I'm just wondering what our objective is, Lieutenant, Han said.
What it always is, Cadet,
Bolandin said, a look of disbelief on his face. He looked as if Han had missed the first day of basic training.
To bring peace and prosperity to the planet. To install a regime loyal to the Emperor and eradicate the hostiles.
But it's their planet, he objected. We're the hostiles.
The lieutenant got close to his face and squinted his eyes.
You got a problem, trooper.
Han didn't meet Bolandin's eyes, but looked toward the airfield where Beckett, Val, and Rio were nearly out of sight.
No problem, sir, he said.
The lieutenant gave Han a warning look. The I've got my eye on you look that he'd become very familiar with, and then headed toward the tents. Han stood at attention until Bolandin was gone, and then he turned and headed for the airfield as nonchalantly as he was able. Tobias Beckett was trying not to think about Corso. He wasn't a friend, not a companion like Val and Rio, but they'd had a deal. He'd get Beckett access to uniforms and help him infiltrate the army. And he'd get Corso off this miserable mud ball when they left. Corso had done his part. And instead of freedom, he'd gotten a grave. Beckett didn't like failing to uphold his end of a deal. He shook his head and surveyed the airfield. Troopers were active, but most of the vehicles and soldiers were still on the battlefield. They could still hear the explosions behind them.
Looks like they're running sorties every half hour,
Beckett said. Val took her own lay of the land. She pointed at the edges of the airfield, and then at the vehicles.
I can take out the guards at the perimeter, and the pilots, the signalmen.
She squinted, and appeared to be counting under her breath. Then she sighed impatiently.
Here, I'll just take them all out.
She got her blaster ready and checked its power cells.
What are we looking at?
Came a young voice behind them. And Val swore quietly. The kid, Han, he'd said his name was, had come up behind them and was eagerly watching them plot. Beckett clapped his hand on Han's shoulder hard enough to send a message.
You got a talent for sticking your nose where it doesn't belong.
Han smiled slyly at him.
And you're wearing a uniform picked full of laser burns. A uniform you took off a dead man.
You're not Imperial Army.
You're thieves, here to steal equipment for a job.
Beckett could feel the anger rise within him. He didn't have time for this.
And I want in, Han finished, as if he had anything useful to give to the plan. Beckett ground down on the chak root held between his molars.
You really didn't have time for this.
Val sighed.
Now we've got to shoot him.
No, he said, shaking his head.
Yes,
she said, flipping the safety off her blaster. The kid looked uncertain, but edged closer to Beckett, still sporting that cocky grin.
No,
Beckett said, a bit more forceful.
Snap his neck. Less mess.
Rio stepped forward, his two dominant arms outstretched, and approached Han. The kid took a step back, hastily, raising his hands.
Hang on!
I came up running scams on the streets of Corellia. I've been boosting AV-21 since I was 10. I'm a driver, I'm a flyer, and like you said... He turned his rueful, hopeful grin on Beckett. I've got to get out of here. Rio dropped his hands, but didn't step back.
What's a flyboy doing down in the mud?
I got kicked out of the academy at Corita for... He paused here, looking slightly embarrassed. Having a mind of my own. But trust me, I'm a great pilot, and I need to get home. Rio laughed.
Back to Corellia? You are nuts.
Han drew himself up.
I got a reason.
Val dismissed him with a wave.
We've already got a pilot.
Han looked at Rio.
The Ardinian?
Beckett sighed. Annoyed now at Rio, who had promised he could keep his disguise up this time. Rio sputtered.
Ardinian? You got a lot of nerve, pal. I'm an Imperial trooper.
Han smirked.
A couple of your arms popped out of your butt and hiked up your pants, trooper.
Rio moved his helmeted face centimeters from Han's, two hands raised as if welcoming a fight, trying to hide the other two behind his back.
You've got a very vivid imagination, he said.
Val jabbed her rifle barrel into the kid's stomach, her threat a bit more insistent. He still didn't move. He knew she wouldn't shoot. Not here. It was too public. Beckett was surprised they hadn't attracted attention yet. Han's face looked desperate now, his eyes wide and pleading to Beckett.
I'll do whatever I've got to do to get back to Corellia.
I've already been away too long. Please, just give me a shot.
As one, Beckett, Val, and Rio turned away from him and went back to surveying the airfield. Maybe if they ignored the kid, he would go away. He looked to be the kind who liked attention. Well, Han said behind them, if you're not interested in me, I think the lieutenant might be very interested in you. Beckett straightened his jacket and turned around. He eyed the kid and noticed the lieutenant in question a few meters away, his back to them.
Blackmail, huh?
He asked. Han nodded as if he didn't want to do it, but he would if he had to. Beckett laughed.
The kid had guts. He had to give him that.
He raised his hand and shouted.
Lieutenant!
Captain,
the lieutenant said, trotting through the mud upon seeing Beckett's insignia. Beckett grabbed Han by the elbow.
We've apprehended a deserter. Take him in.
Han looked shocked. As if the sudden shift in power had given him vertigo.
That's... Wait! No!
The lieutenant sneered at him.
I should have known. This one's a troublemaker.
He signaled the two stormtroopers on guard, who came forward and pinned Han's hands behind his back. They started to pull him away. Rio raised his voice as they left.
He's delusional, too!
And a liar, Beckett added. I wouldn't believe a word he says.
Don't go anywhere without me,
Han called over his shoulder, like he was already part of Beckett's group, and this was a minor hiccup. The gall of that kid. He was a piece of work.
Feed him to the beast,
the lieutenant said as he moved out of earshot. The last thing Beckett heard was Han finally focusing on his captors.
The beast?
Chapter 8
The Wookiee dreamed of Kashyyyk and of his family. The hungrier he got, the more he dreamed.
Compared with his smooth-skinned captors, he was ancient. Their lifespans were mere seasons to a Wookiee.
He could wait, if need be, until these humans dropped their guard. Or until they died. He was good at being patient.
A crash disturbed his meditation, and he had to leave the trees and swamps of his memories and return to the present, which was only mud, darkness, and thick dried mats of fur.
The mud coated him.
The humans hadn't allowed him anything with which to groom himself, and they had pelted him with the thick, foul stuff. He had tried to comb it out with his claws, but it was no use. The mats pulled at his skin whenever he moved, pushing him closer and closer to raging. A human had fallen into his pen, landing in the mud on his back. The guards had been throwing him scraps of meat every few days, but had talked about wanting to find someone alive to feed to him. He hadn't gotten that hungry, not yet, but he resented being used as entertainment. Resented this small, smooth thing that they threw at him to taunt him. He took a step forward, and the mats pulled at his skin, and the simmering rage began to boil.
"There's a beast?" Han asked.
The troopers had finally gotten his attention. None of his charm or threats had worked on the fake captain, and now he had a beast to worry about? This was starting to be a pretty bad day. Without explanation, the troopers muscled him forward toward a pit. Han tried to resist, but they clapped a shackle on his ankle and gave him a push. He slipped on the mud and tumbled into the pit, landing roughly on his back. He thought the battlefield, with the blood and the burning and the dead, had smelled bad. But at least that had been in the open air, or open mist, considering the planet he was on. Now he was in a roughly 12-by-12-meter hole, with a lattice grate above him supported by a wooden beam in the center of the pit, with chains wrapped around it. One chain snaked into the shadows of one corner. Around him lay discarded bits of droids and bones. A refuse pit with a beast? This was where he was going to die? Han heard a low growl come from the corner. It sounded angry. Hungry.
I guess that's the beast, he thought, and got painfully to his feet.
He backed up until he hit the wall.
I haven't fed it in 3 days,
a voice said above him. The guards who had tossed him in had stayed around to watch the slaughter, it seemed.
Should be fun, the other responded.
The beast lunged from the shadows, and unable to back up any more, Han leapt to the side and landed painfully on the bones that littered the floor. He tried to get a good look at the shape above him. Han had never seen such a filthy Wookiee. The thing had been slathered with mud, and his fur was all matted. He had to be miserable. And if he was filthy, miserable, and starved, this wouldn't be fun. The Wookiee was at least 2.5 meters tall. Han scrambled to his feet and took a step back as it stepped forward, growling. He dragged a chain connected to his ankle, like Han. No, actually, it was the same chain. He took a moment to glare up at the watching guards. They'd chained them together? Seriously? Focusing on his opponent, Han put up his hands nervously and said,
"Whoa, big fella. This doesn't have to get ugly.
Got something for you."
"It's right here."
He made to go into his pocket and look for something, wishing he could come up with another throw a rock and get free plan. Instead of finding anything for the growling creature, he reached down and found a clod of mud.
He swung it as hard as he could, upward, and hit the Wookiee in the face. Probably a mistake, even though Han had a moment of hope as the beast roared in surprise and pain. The Wookiee recovered and swung back at Han, connecting and sending him backward into the wall again. He was slower getting up this time. He blinked and tried to remember what he knew about Wookiees. He felt his side, badly bruised, of course, but he hadn't been ripped open, and Wookiees had frighteningly sharp claws. The Wookiee wasn't trying to kill him. Not right away, anyway. Han dashed forward again and ducked when the Wookiee made a grab for him and ended up behind him. He gave a push with all his might, and the Wookiee took one step forward and whirled on him, growling. The air left his body as he slammed against the wall again. Gasping, he leapt to his feet again and jumped, grabbing the Wookiee's matted coat and scrambling on top, holding on for dear life. This was not a dumb creature to buck and jump to unseat him. The Wookiee spun around and slammed his back into the support beam. Again and again, he slammed Han against the beam in order to scrape him off or crush him. "This is even better than I thought," said one of the guards with relish. "We needed this," the other said, as if he were sliding into a hot bath and not watching two sentient creatures fight to the death. The Wookiee's slamming attacks worked. Han fell off. He lay on the ground, trying to figure out if his spine was still intact or if it had come out the front of him. Perhaps now the Wookiee would give him a quick death. That would be preferable at this point. Time seemed to slow as he saw the guards laughing eagerly, the Wookiee above him roaring, and the support beam. The cracked support beam. Perhaps he wouldn't die today. Cheating death would require some communication, however, and that wasn't his strong point. But what did he have to lose? He climbed to his feet and sneered at the Wookiee. "That all you got?" he taunted. With a roar, the Wookiee picked him up and threw him at the beam, which gave a little more when Han slammed into it. "This can work," he thought. "If I can live through it." The Wookiee advanced on him, roaring as he pinned Han to the muddy ground. As mud filled his mouth, Han grunted and then wheezed something out. A coughing roar. The Wookiee stopped mid-roar and cocked his head. He gave a roar back. One not of rage, but of communication.
"I know enough,"
Han said. He added another roar, and then a grunt, hoping he had said, "You're not the first dumb Wookiee I've tangled with." The Wookiee roared with rage and threw him roughly to the ground. He fought for breath, realizing he should probably table all the insults he had learned and try other words. He painfully pulled breath and roared or wheezed the words, "Listen! Me have plan of break out!" Or hoped he said them. Han could understand Shriwook well enough, but speaking it was another matter. Beyond insults, his vocabulary was hardly robust. Even though he hadn't insulted the Wookiee this time, he was pretty sure anyway, the fact that he was speaking no better than a Wookiee toddler apparently enraged the beast more, and he roared in Han's face. The world was growing dark with a red halo. He fought for just a little more air and wheezed, "You and I freedom make by secret battle of pretend." He flailed his hands so it slapped the support beam behind him. "Look, big stick."
That made sense, right?
Something lighted in the creature's eyes. Some kind of sudden understanding. Han wasn't sure how his rudimentary language skills had gotten through, but he knew that the Wookiee understood him, even past their simple discussion. The Wookiee dropped him,
which wasn't comfortable, but better than getting flung to the ground. Han got up cautiously and motioned his opponent forward, hoping against hope that he had communicated successfully.
"Now come on, you mangy Kashyyyk moof milker!"
he yelled, and the Wookiee took an exaggerated swing backward, and Han found it simple to duck so that his opponent could focus all of his great strength on the beam. Han dodged each blow as the Wookiee focused his roaring rage on the beam, shouting for help from the onlookers to help the ruse. He blurted a surprised yelp when the Wookiee's hands landed on his shoulders, lifted him, and hurled Han into the support beam with all his strength. Or what Han figured had to be all his strength. Ears ringing from the roaring beast, Han rolled as he hit the mud, the Wookiee leaping to land prone beside him, just as the beam cracked fully and gave way. The grate above them collapsed, tumbling the guards into the pit and knocking them unconscious. The spike holding Han and the Wookiee's chain to the beam slipped out, and they were free. Han laughed in triumph. He slapped the Wookiee on the shoulder.
"See what happens when you listen to me?"
The Wookiee groaned, low in his throat. Han reflected how it was amazing that he could tell the difference between a roar of rage and a communicating roar. No longer fearing for his life probably had something to do with that.
"That's the next part of the plan," he said, pointing to the top of the pit. "I can't fix everything at once."
The Wookiee stood, shaking his head, seemingly baffled by this small person. He put his hands on Han's shoulders again, and Han had a panicked moment, fearing he had completely misread the entire situation.
"Hey, wait, what are you doing?" he said, and then yelled as the Wookiee launched him upward and out of the pit.
Bloody and swollen, and wishing he'd come up with a less painful plan, Han climbed to his feet. A ship's engines grumbled overhead as an AT hauler passed above them.
Han pointed at it and then yelled, "Follow me!"
He dashed off without looking back. Han figured he'd already proven himself to be the brains of this duo, and the Wookiee would be right behind him. They'd communicated and worked together well, albeit painfully, and as soon as they got out of this, he could go his way and the Wookiee his own. The Wookiee clearly felt differently, as Han's leg was nearly ripped from his hip when the chain between them went taut and the Wookiee's greater mass pulled Han to the ground.
"Hey, we're going this way," he said, yanking on the chain.
The Wookiee yanked harder, trying to run in the opposite direction, and Han stumbled forward. Han would not win this test of brute strength.
"I have some very good friends of mine at that airfield, and they're leaving right now. It's our one shot at getting off this mud ball. If you want to live, we go that way. After that, you can go whichever way you want. I don't care. But right now, that's the way to go."
He pointed toward the airfield just in case the Wookiee needed more information.
"Trust me!"
The Wookiee looked at the direction he had been running, and then the direction Han was going. He made a chittering sound, then nodded once. They ran toward the airfield just as stormtroopers arrived, attracted by the sound of the pen collapsing. The Wookiee, now freed, roared at them, and they stopped in their tracks. He pushed a nearby trooper to the ground and pulled his blaster out of his limp hands. He tossed it to Han, who caught it with surprise. And they were really and truly off, this time going the same direction. Val and Rio tossed the last dead pilot onto the tarmac, clearing out the Imperial AT hauler. Rio climbed aboard, pulled off his helmet, and took a deep breath, stretching his lower set of arms.
"I couldn't breathe in that thing,"
he said, tossing the helmet to the floor as he got settled in the pilot's seat.
"No wonder they're such lousy pilots. They can't turn their heads, they can't breathe, they can't hear each other."
He shook his head at the bodies littering the ground below, as if they would never learn. They wouldn't now.
But that was beside the point.
Beckett came up behind him and checked the cockpit as Rio got set for launch.
He was about to close the door when he caught movement in the distance.
I'll be damned, he whispered.
The eager kid, who simply would not go away, was running toward them, waving, coated head to foot in mud. At first, Beckett thought the kid was being pursued by something large and very muddy. But the way the two ran, holding the chain that bound them together, it was clear they were cooperating. Rio followed his gaze and laughed.
Unbelievable!
He squinted his bulbous eyes and then widened them.
Is that a Wookiee with him?
I'll say it. I don't care. This kid's growing on me.
The two figures continued to wave, jumping up and down.
You know, we could use some more muscle on the team.
It felt wrong to be considering a replacement for Corso so quickly after his death. But Beckett couldn't ignore the truth in Rio's words.
Don't even think about it,
Val warned, reading the look on Beckett's face.
I'm telling you, Rio continued, you will never have a deeper sleep than when you're curled up in a Wookiee's lap.
Beckett couldn't help but admire the way that the kid had doggedly pursued them.
There was something special about a kid so persistent that he'd survived a battle, been thrown into a cage with a Wookiee, and apparently convinced the Wookiee to break out with him. The kid was a pain, but Beckett found he'd rather him be on his team than working against him. And adding a Wookiee to the team, that might be worth it. Beckett smiled.
Val made a disgusted noise and pointed Rio toward the pilot's seat.
Let's get out of here!
Beckett watched the unlikely pair run a moment more. Troopers had broken out of the misty haze and were chasing them, some pausing to take aim and fire blasters, others just running to get in range.
He had to bring friends, didn't he? Beckett shook his head and punched a button.
With a joyful whoop, the pair ran forward toward the plank that had just lowered. The troopers had started to fire on them, but the hauler was armored enough that mere blasters weren't a problem. The human and Wookiee wouldn't be having any fun, though, so Beckett made sure they were inside before he signaled for Rio to move. The Wookiee was roaring when they came into view, and Beckett drew back a moment, startled. That didn't sound grateful, but the Wookiee wasn't looking aggressive. Perhaps it was relief. Han grinned at his companion. His white teeth and bright blue eyes were the only non-muddy things about him.
See?
He said to the Wookiee, punching his shoulder. Told you I'd think of something.
They're very good friends.
He looked around, admiring the ship.
And I knew you were thieves, but I didn't know an AT hauler was your goal.
That's a bold move.
What could you want where you need this kind of lifting power? Nobody asked you,
Rio said, but his voice was friendly.
Fair enough, Han said, matching Rio's tone.
So where are we headed, Captain?
Beckett sighed. They were now part of it, like it or not.
Vandor. The Iridium Mountains.
That's exciting, Han said, digging some dirt out of his ear.
What's the plan?
Beckett smiled.
Kid, you keep your mouth shut and your eyes open. I guarantee you'll have all the excitement you can handle very soon.
He looked at the mud-caked relics in front of him.
Now you two go get cleaned up before Val sees you.
He nodded toward the co-pilot's seat, where Val sat rigid and obviously ignoring them. Beckett dropped his voice.
We're in enough trouble with her as it is.
Han tried to wash every moment of his time on Mimban off his body. Under the newly acquired mud, he had layers of dust, more mud, some blood, and general body odor. Or at least that's how it felt. He couldn't remember the last time he had showered. He would use all the hauler's water supply if he wasn't careful. He needed to leave some for Chewie.
The water around his feet turned black all of a sudden, and he turned in surprise to see the Wookiee entering the shower with him. His bulk blocked the stream of water, and Han glared up at him, mud sliding off both of them in rivulets. "We couldn't have done this like maybe one at a time?" he demanded. The Wookiee growled like it was no big deal. Easy for him to say. He had hair covering everything. And mud, the poor guy. Han shrugged. Of everything he had dealt with today, this was pretty low on the list of things to be upset about. The Wookiee lifted a bottle of something Han was pretty sure wouldn't be found in an Imperial ship. He squinted at it. "Where did you get Detangler?" The Wookiee grunted a few times. Han laughed. "The woman? Val? Did she go from hating us to pitying us?" He gave Han a pointed look. Han sighed. "You. She pitied you. Still hates me?" The Wookiee made a non-committal grunt and went back to getting the mud out of his thick coat. Han left him to it. The hauler headed toward the sharp, snow-covered mountains of Vandor One. Han and Chewie stood on an observation gantry slung beneath the fuselage of the AT hauler, the wind whipping their hair around and stinging Han's eyes. He still didn't know exactly what they were here for, but stealing this ship had gotten him away from the Imperials, and that was all right with him. Han glanced up at the Wookiee. "Thanks for helping me get out of there," he said. The Wookiee moaned low in his throat. Han waited a beat, then added, "And you're welcome, by the way." The Wookiee roared, and Han turned on him. "No, they only took you because of me. This is a sweet deal. You do this one job with them, make some real money, and then we're free. When's the last time you could say that?" Chewie shrugged and made a sad sound. "Been a while for me, too," Han said, looking back over the mountains. "What's your name, anyway?" The Wookiee groaned and made a complex sound of grunts. Han chuckled. "Chewbacca? Son of who?" Before Chewbacca could repeat it, he just shook his head. "We're gonna have to come up with a nickname, 'cause I ain't saying that every time." Chewbacca thought about it, then shrugged and nodded. Han peered over the railing, straight down to the jagged peaks below. Snow was a rare sight in Coronet City, and Han had never seen anything like the icy crests spread out before the hauler, glittering in the sunshine. He wondered how deep the snow was. The sharp cold that stung his skin was exhilarating. It was truly beautiful here.
"Do you think if we spit, it'll freeze before it hits the ground?" he asked.
The Wookiee nodded and growled deep and wet in his throat. He let loose a giant ball of phlegm, and they watched it drift down to get lost amid the snow. They camped deep into the Iridium Mountains. They'd hit a supply depot before arriving, and Han now sat in a very thick, fur-lined coat. He had to reassure Chewie that it wasn't lined with Wookiee hair. Chewie remained as naked as before, needing only his now clean natural coat to keep him warm. Han was still cold, of course. He could feel the hypothermia squeezing in between the seams of his clothing layers, like the mud had on Mimban. He watched his breath puff out in white clouds. Val and Beckett were in the distance, watching something through a scope. Their voices traveled over the cold, dry air.
"It's still a bad idea. They're going to get in the way," Val said.
"They'll be useful," Beckett said. "The Wookiee will be anyway. Even Rio isn't as strong as he is."
"It's pointless to argue about it now," she conceded. "The only way to get rid of them is to shoot them. And even I'm not that desperate yet."
Han decided it was time to interrupt this train of thought. He got up and approached them, and they stopped talking. "How much longer?" he asked. "I'm freezing."
"Here it comes,"
Beckett said as if he hadn't heard Han. He handed the scope to Val. Over their shoulders, in the dusk, Han could barely see the streak of an armored freight carrier pulled by a heavy-duty drive chain. It had three sections: engine, supply cars, and caboose. Han could just tell there was a turret-mounted cannon atop the caboose. It had an over-under design, with cars both sitting on top and hanging beneath the tracks. As the train snaked around the mountain, it shuddered and thundered on high trestles, knocking loose snow and rock as it passed close to the cliff edges. Beckett pointed, his hand on Val's shoulder.
"We hit the conveyance between the tower and the bridge. Rio drops us in. We separate the payload container, hook it up to the AT hauler. Rio jams the distress signal," Val said, taking up the narrative. "I blow the bridge, the payload slides off the track, and we sail away."
She spoke casually, as if she were giving directions to the cantina.
"Sounds simple enough," Han said.
Beckett gave him a withering look.
"Nothing about this is simple. See the depository?"
Han squinted, but shook his head. All he saw was the conveyix tearing across a bridge before it entered a tunnel through the mountain. Then he realized it wasn't a tunnel. It was the entrance to a fortress built right into the mountain for maximum security. Now that he knew what he was looking at, he could spot the probe droids guarding the depository from anyone intending harm.
"That's Crispin Imperial Depository," Beckett said,
and then turned to Val.
"If we trip that security beam and wake up those vipers, things are about to get real spicy real fast."
She put the scope away.
"Well, I'm not the one you should be worried about," she reminded him.
Beckett frowned.
"What? Infus Nest?"
Val nodded and sighed. She looked like she was about to face a rancor or something.
"What's an Infus Nest?" Han asked.
"I told you, we're way ahead of the competition on this one. There's no way Infus Nest even knows about this shipment. Only my guy has the intel."
"You'd better be right," Val said. "Because sometimes you put your faith in the wrong people. I want a chance to bring in a huge score, and you bring in amateurs."
Beckett spread his hands.
"In case you hadn't noticed, we're a little short-handed.
So we get who we need. The Zan sisters, or Bossk. But instead, you're putting our lives in the hands of morons."
Val turned her back on him and walked away. Han shrugged. He'd been called worse. They set up camp near the hauler, which Rio had set down among snow-covered trees. They were far enough away from the conveyix tracks that the Imperial forces wouldn't be able to detect them with scopes or their Viper droids. The evening was homey in a completely unexpected way, with warmth, food, and stories. Chewie stoked a campfire while Rio prepared dinner, the pilot showing gourmet skills that amazed Han. But as he watched Rio deftly chop and sauté, his forearms moving in an almost dance-like fashion, he admitted to himself he shouldn't have been surprised. Beckett brought up the previous conversation, finally acknowledging that Han had been witness to Val's ire.
"You guys morons?"
he asked Han and Chewie.
"No,"
Han said.
"There, see?"
Beckett said, as if it were finished.
"We're not morons," Han said.
"I've waited a long time for a shot like this. I'm not about to screw it up, all right?"
"Oh, come on, Val. He looks so sincere,"
Rio said from his spot by the fire.
"Plus, have you ever tried to disinvite a Wookiee to anything? Not a good idea."
Chewie chuckled at that, but Val was unmoved.
"That doesn't prove anything."
"Look, I've got good instincts about these guys. And besides, do you see any other options?
Beckett pointed around at the snowy mountains around them.
I just hope you know what you're doing, she said.
Look, we're going to clear our debts, he said, touching her cheek. Go back to Glee Anselm. I'm finally going to learn how to play that valichord.
She smiled for the first time that Han had seen.
Babe, you're never going to learn how to play the valichord.
She's right, Rio said. You are tone deaf. They all laughed at Beckett, who glared at them. But the tension had broken. They all settled by the fire, and Rio and Beckett started telling adventure stories. Even Val relaxed a bit, laughing and rolling her eyes at the obvious exaggerations. She didn't tell many herself. Just one that she tried to bring up, but Beckett steadfastly refused to participate. Val didn't have to go into much detail. Something about a queen and explosives and gladiators? But clearly the memory was deeply personal to both of them, and deeply humiliating for Beckett. Even the mention of it made Rio laugh so hard he fell off the rock he was perched on. As Han listened to the tales, he felt sure that the Imperial infantry time on Mimban was only a hiccup on his journey from Corellia to a life of adventure. He was with the right people, at the right place, at the right time. Life was going to be more interesting and more lucrative than ever before. Chewbacca stayed quiet, too, going through the team's equipment and finding an old bandolier that fit him nicely. He held it up to Val and Beckett with an inquisitive grunt.
Huh?
Go ahead. It don't fit any of us anyway,
Beckett said, and Val nodded. With the bandolier around him, the Wookiee somehow looked a little more decent. The illusion of nudity banished by the simple strap of leather and ammunition. Han and Chewie ate with the group, Han taking sips of the cooking sherry and brandy that Rio passed around afterward. Val leaned against Beckett, the light of the fire playing gently on both their faces. For a moment they looked like a happy couple, camping on a pristine, unexplored world. Not seasoned thieves, about to attack an Imperial complex. Val regarded Han. Her face hardened again.
Don't you think we should tell these two what we're up against?
She asked, waving her hand at Han and Chewie.
It's not going to be easy.
They may not know a lot, but he's street smart, Beckett said, jabbing a thumb at Han. And he's a Wookiee,
he added, pointing at Chewie as if she needed reminding.
They don't need to know who Enfys Nest is to spring into action if we're raided. Right, kid?
Han nodded. I grew up on the streets, running scams and lifting spears. Current events and politics aren't my strong point, but I've gotten out of tons of scrapes. Chewie didn't bother defending himself. He was a Wookiee, after all. That's all they needed to know about him.
So are you two finally going to settle down after this job?
Rio asked Beckett and Val. Val laughed derisively.
Him?
Never. Well, now, I've always got my dream, Beckett drawled, sounding hurt. I really want that valichord.
Your lifelong dream,
Val said, smiling at him with a little more tenderness this time.
A valichord?
Han asked, trying to remember what instrument that was.
Yeah, I've always wanted to learn,
Beckett said wistfully.
I think I'd be good at it. And this deal will finally get me credits to do it. Retire, buy a little cottage, buy a valichord.
Are they expensive?
Han asked, still not sure what one was.
Well, they ain't cheap, I'll tell you that,
Beckett said.
But what's driving you, kid?
Yeah, what's your sob story, Flyboy?
Rio asked.
Who, me?
Han asked.
Well, I'm on a team that won't tell me what we're stealing. he began. But Rio shook his head.
That's not what I mean. You're after something. I know the look. Why'd you defect? Revenge?
No, it's not revenge,
Val said, looking at him with something other than malice.
Look at him. If anything, it's a girl.
Oh, a girl? Tell us about the girl, Han. Is she nice?
Rio asked, jumping from his rock. He leaned forward and gave an exaggerated grin.
Does she have sharp teeth?
There was a girl, Han said reluctantly, staring at the fire. But, I got out. She didn't. Swore to myself I'd become a pilot. Get a ship. Go back and find her. So that's what I'm gonna do right after this job.
How do you know she'll still be there?
Rio asked. I just know, Han said.
Personally, I refuse to be tied down by anyone,
Rio said, pouring himself calf from the pot by the fire.
Though many have tried.
Val chuckled.
Come on, Rio. You can't fool me. Everybody needs somebody. She leaned forward and smiled at Beckett, moving his blonde hair off his forehead. Even a broken-down old crook like this one. She kissed Beckett,
and Han was torn between wanting to look away to give them privacy
and wanting to look and see what love was like when you were allowed to have it.
What about you? Han asked Chewbacca. What are you going to do with your share? Chewie glanced at Han, who figured Chewie was asking for translation. He nodded. Chewie let out a long groan, mournful and low, and Han listened intently. Han swallowed as everyone looked from Chewie to him.
What's he saying?
Rio asked. He said the Wookiees were enslaved by the Empire, taken off Kashyyyk. Now he's searching for his... Han stopped, trying to translate the word. Not sure if he's saying tribe or family.
What's the difference?
Beckett asked, staring into the fire and twirling his DG-29 blaster thoughtfully. Chewie groaned again, and Han listened, then translated. He was fighting to free his homeworld. He fought the Empire for a long time. He was captured. They called him a monster. Drugged him. He stopped translating and looked at him in disbelief. They were taking you somewhere to sell you as a pit fighter? Chewie nodded and waved his hand for Han to continue. He wants to help his world. Free Kashyyyk. Also, there are enslaved Wookiees out here like him. Han sat back and looked impressed. Freeing an entire world was a noble cause. He just wanted his own ship and to go back to Corellia for Kira. He hadn't even thought about the rest of the galaxy. Nobody on those planets had ever done much for him, so he wasn't sure why he should stick his neck out for them. But Chewie was a part of something Han had never experienced. The closest he had come to a tribe or family was Kira. Han watched Beckett twirl the blaster. He felt like a kid, wanting to copy all of Beckett's smooth habits and talents. Show me how to do that, he said.
Kid, the only thing you need to learn to do is do what I say when I say it. By this time tomorrow, you'll have more than enough to buy your own ship.
He twirled the blaster in his hand once more and holstered it. He picked up a rifle and stripped off the stock and barrel with quick twists. What was left was a slim blaster, lethal and quick. He gave Han an appraising look and then tossed it over the campfire to him. Han caught it in surprise.
You'll need a good weapon tomorrow, he said.
The blaster felt right in his hand. A DL-44 blaster. A modified DL-44, he reminded himself.
Get some sleep, Beckett said. We have a train to rob tomorrow. Do you really hate him that much?
Beckett asked Val in the dark.
Val sighed and rolled over to face him in his sleeping sack.
I can see the Wookiee replacing Corso, she said.
We're hurting without some muscle.
But the kid? He's naive, and is likely to make a stupid mistake, or four. We can't afford it.
I think you'll come in handy, he said. You didn't like Rio at first either.
She laughed. He loved that sound. It meant she had finally let her guard down, showing the side only the people closest to her saw.
Rio was obnoxious and tried to steal our speeder before he joined the crew.
Yeah, but that's how you find a good pilot.
Only if he doesn't succeed in lifting your vehicle,
she reminded him. There was a pause.
Do you really think you'll be content with settling down after this?
You really think I won't?
I've known you a long time, Beckett. You're not happy if you're not scheming. How much scheming do you do playing the Valacord?
He stroked her face.
I scheme a lot with this one, he said. And I'm pretty happy.
She was silent in the dark. He wondered if she had gone to sleep. Then she said,
All right, then we'll retire.
Chapter 9. They had a solid, well-thought-out plan, and Han had a secret suspicion that the detailed plan was where they had gone wrong. Stealing the AT hauler had been a good move. It was strong enough to lift one of those cargo sections full of whatever Beckett and crew had wanted to steal. It was fast enough to keep up with the speedy conveyix, and Rio proved immediately that he was skilled enough to keep level with the train despite the twists and turns in the track. It was when they left the hauler that things started to go sideways. Beckett went first, goggles in place and jaw set. He opened the hauler's gantry and stood at the edge for a moment, wind whipping his hair. He waited for Rio to get a little closer, and then leapt to the roof of the conveyix below them. There was no turning back now. If Han lost his nerve and failed to jump, Val would be completely justified in tossing his useless carcass from the hauler to land wherever she and Rio wanted him to splatter. They'd already dropped her off at her spot on the bridge, several clicks away, to place the charges that would blow the bridge at the right time. Chewbacca jumped down after Beckett. The goggles held down the hair on his head, while the wind whipped the rest of his coat, making him look twice his size. Han could do this, no question. He thought of the times in his childhood on Corellia when he had jumped from large Imperial shuttles onto speeding monorails. Except he had never done that, so he tried to imagine that he had done something remotely similar. He gripped the edge and panted, seeing Beckett and Chewie below him, waiting. His earpiece crackled, and then Rio's voice was there, offering support.
Hey, don't think I'm gonna die. Think, hey, I might live.
Rio needed to work on his motivational speaking, Han thought. But then he realized Rio's advice, as absurd as it was, had broken through his terror. He took a deep breath and jumped, feeling everything fall away from him for an eternity. He slammed down on the roof of the conveyix behind Beckett and Chewie, convinced they had been more graceful than he. He failed to get his balance, and for a terrifying instant, he stumbled and slipped toward the back edge of the car. He reached out to grab something, anything, and gripped the sharp edge of the car before he fell to a very long, painful death. He held on, panting, and then pulled himself up with a grunt. He had to prove himself to his team. With a deep breath, he finally got adapted to the movement of the train and stood up. He waved to Beckett and Chewie. I'm okay, he assured them. And Chewie turned with a grunt. Han suspected the Wookiee hadn't been worried about him. The cold wind was 100 times worse than the general creeping cold he had felt the day before. It cut through everything, making him feel as if the clothing he wore had been stripped away already. His nose and ears immediately began to get numb.
We couldn't have stolen something from a tropical planet, he thought miserably. Beckett and Chewbacca were already at work ahead of him, carefully walking along the roofs from car to car, counting the containers and attaching safety cables to the pipe that ran along the roof of the tanker car. Beckett then dropped the shoulder bag he carried and pulled out a large fusion cutter, a tool with a laser bit designed to cut through almost anything. He crouched down and got to work on the lock securing the hatch. It parted easily with clouds of sparks flying off and away downwind to die quickly in the cold air. Han reached Beckett as he set the tool aside and yanked the lock off. Another piece of detritus to fly away and litter the wilderness below. He put his hand on Beckett's shoulder to steady himself and peered inside to see what the grand prize was for this little adventure. He nearly didn't recognize it. It was too familiar. In his mind, the contents of the containers belonged in small stolen cylinders, not a mobile vault containing countless glowing glass vials. The very same substance that had saved him and damned Kira.
Coaxium, he said aloud. That's enough to power a fleet.
Beckett nodded, surprised Han knew his stuff.
Or blow us all straight to hell, he said, grinning.
The AT hauler had kept pace with them, and now Rio dropped down winch cables for them to attach to the heavy U-bolts at the four corners of the car's roof. Two steps done, and it was going smoothly. All they had to do was attach the cables, wait for Val to blow the bridge, and lift the car from the tracks as the rest of the train plummeted to the valley below. And they would be off with a Hutt's ransom worth of coaxium. Han was a party to a massive theft, part of a crew that knew its stuff. He felt again that he was in the right place to learn exactly what he needed to know. This was the one job that would change everything. That confidence lasted about 2 or 3 seconds. With the wind screaming around them, they felt rather than heard the sharp thunk of magnetized boots on the train behind them. Han looked back and recognized the uniform of range troopers, covered head to toe in synthetic fur-lined armor. He had no love for any of the Empire's troopers, but the range troopers were some of the worst. They had served in tougher climates than most, and their jobs included guarding high-speed trains. With such flashy jobs, they saw themselves as elites, looking down on all the other Imperial soldiers, troopers, and infantry alike. The range troopers moved with confidence, warm in their armor and secure with their magnetized boots. They were also steady with their aim, trained to ignore the swaying train and icy elements as they shot. Distracted by the troopers, no one was watching the track ahead. They were surprised when the track twisted to accommodate a shift in the landscape, and the train twisted with it, turning nearly 90 degrees sideways. Beckett and Han found handholds,